We're just switching it on. You'll be there soon.
What's that? You can hear me better now? All right, yeah, I hear that. All right. It's great to be here this evening. It's always fun for me to get to be in two churches in one day and take two communions with two families of churches. And so I was in Durban this morning, and now we're here this evening. So it's great to be here with you. Before I get going, though, I wonder if somebody could make some change for me. I have this note for $500 million. It's Zimbabwe dollars, but I wondered if somebody could give me 500 million rand and maybe something a little smaller. No, I'm serious. Will anybody exchange 500 million rand for this $500 million? This fits in your pocket much easier than 500 million rand. Any takers? Seriously, not one. Why not? Well, I actually have a purpose in saying that. Turn over to Romans chapter 1. And this is where I want to start tonight as we talk about, honestly, not probably a topic that we talk a whole lot about in the church these days, which is idolatry, idols. But we're going to look at it and really try to pull out tonight and tomorrow what the Bible has to say about idolatry and what that means for us today. Because although I think sometimes we use the word idolatry, we tend to think that it was something way back, Old Testament times, you know, little statues, and we don't do that anymore. It really doesn't hold a lot for us. But in Romans chapter 1, Paul is describing sort of the state of mankind throughout history and how we've gotten to the sad state that we are. And he says, beginning in verse 20, from the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, that is, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood through what he has made. As a result, people are without excuse, for though they knew God, they did not glorify him as God or show gratitude. Instead, their thinking became nonsense, their senseless minds were darkened, claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man, birds, four-footed animals, and reptiles. As we begin to read this passage in Romans, it strikes us very quickly, something has gone terribly wrong with mankind. Far worse and far more stupid than exchanging 500 million rand for 500 million Zim dollars. As silly as that would be, he says what mankind has done is exchanged the glory of God for part of the creation. And we start to worship that instead of God, which is sad. And he shows something here. If you look, there are really some elements here before we move on. And if you look through the verses, you see sort of the steps that humans go through. He says, first, we stop showing gratitude to God. Then, that results in us, we start to think improperly. When you stop showing gratitude to God for everything that he's given us, all of creation, all that he's done for us, our thinking goes wrong. Which, when our thinking goes wrong, see, it's a domino effect. Because then we start to get a darkening of our desires. We start to want things other than what God wants for us. The next step then is we start to think as humans that we have a wisdom apart from God. Well, we have all this knowledge. We know all of these things, but it's separate from God's wisdom. The next step is the sad part. That's when we just wholesale exchange God for a part of his creation. And then comes the scary part. God delivers us over to our own desires. He doesn't force us to worship Him. He says, okay, here you go. That's what you want. Do it. And then we begin to exalt and worship part of the creation. We're going to talk about that aspect in just a minute. But first, I want to go to Exodus chapter 20. All the way back, God said, and what we know as the Ten Commandments, the Ten Words. It says, do not make an idol for yourself, whether in the shape of anything in the heavens above, or on the earth below, or in the waters under the earth. You must not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the father's sin to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing love, faithful love, to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commands. Now, in the ancient world, there was two basic forms of idolatry. There was one that's directly addressed here, which is creating an image or an idol that represented a god that was part of the creation. God says, don't do that. Don't make images. Don't make idols. Don't worship something else. Don't even make an image of me. Because you start making images of God, before long, we start making God in our own image, in our own concept, and making Him what we want. The other aspect, though, biblically of idolatry, is putting anything in the place that only belongs to God. The Bible even says things like greed can become idolatry. So there's a heart aspect to idolatry as well. Now let's go back to the beginning, Genesis chapter 1. It says, then God said, let us make man in our image according to our likeness. They will rule the fish of the sea, the birds of the sky, the animals, all the earth, and the creatures that crawl on the earth. So God created man in His own image. He created him in the image of God. He created them male and female. God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Rule the fish of the sea, the birds of the sky, and every creature that crawls on the earth. So it says here, we are made in God's image. That's the word I want to focus on for a minute. In the Hebrew, that word means idol, representative, or reflector. It doesn't necessarily imply the idea that we physically look like God. It means that God made us to reflect His image, His will, His desires, His rule into the world. He made us to be mirrors, if you will. Now, the image that the author of Genesis is giving us here is there was actually common practice in the ancient world. Kings would take statues of themselves, usually stylized, to make themselves look far more mighty than they actually were. And they would place it around the kingdom in far-reaching areas, because back then you didn't have Facebook, you didn't have TV, where you could go on and see what your king looked like. So he would place statues all over the kingdom, and that would remind the people of his rule, of his reign. Oh, there's the king. We're reminded that we have to do things the king's way. What the writer of Genesis is getting at here is God made us as His images, His statues, and placed us around His kingdom to rule over it and remind people who really is in charge. The purpose of man, then, is to reflect God's will so that when we act, we are perfect mirrors of God's will. That's our purpose. We are reflectors. We are mirrors. We reflect, we take on what is around us. You can see that tonight in a simple little way as different types of music played. We begin to take on sort of the feel of the music being played, right? As human beings, you do that. If you're driving in the car and a fast song comes on, you start bopping around and you're moving. And if a slow song comes on, you kind of, you know, you're slow and you begin to reflect. And in a silly way, it demonstrates you begin to reflect your environment. Look at young people. They begin to reflect the people around them. It's called peer pressure. You become like the people around you, typically. It's a typical human reaction. You see, God made us to be that way. He made us to take on His characteristics and be like that in the world. But as soon as we exchange, as we stop doing God's will, and say, I'm not going to do God's will, I'm going to do my will, because that's what sin is. Right? That's the simplest definition of sin, doing my will, not God's will. And that's what happens in Genesis 3. Adam and Eve say, you know what? I think we'll, that's great what God wants us to do, but I think we'll do this our way. We will do our will instead of God's. And in Genesis 5, verse 3, it says, after the fall, when Adam and Eve had their next child, that child was no longer in the image of God. It was in the image of Adam. Because when we start doing our own will, we can no longer reflect God's will, can we? But because we are made to be mirrors, made to be sponges that take in God's will, become like Him and do His will, if we're not reflecting God, we will start reflecting something. That's the key concept I want to focus on tonight. Let's go over to Psalm 115. I think Psalm 115 is going to be kind of our key verse here that speaks super clearly the point we're getting at. And tonight, we're going to, a little bit of image, but we're mostly, the series is Idols, Image, and I. Tonight, we're mostly going to talk about idols, a little bit of image. Then tomorrow, we're going to get into image and I. How does this really affect us right now? So we're laying the foundation tonight. But in Psalm 115, it says, our God is in heaven, and He does whatever He pleases. Their idols are silver and gold, made by human hands. Now, in our world today, something made by hand, that's like a good connotation, right? Like, ooh, that was made by hand. You'll get that very often. That's good stuff. In the ancient world, if something was made by hand, by human hands, that was a bad connotation. Because it meant in opposition to something that God made. In fact, you even see a biblical theme of usually they would use stones for altars instead of bricks. Babylon, the big empires, they built with bricks because bricks were made by human hands, but stones were crafted by God. So we will use those for the altar to God. So things made by human hands, not good. Now he's talking about these idols and he says, they have mouths, but they cannot speak. Eyes, but they cannot see. They have ears, but they cannot hear. Noses, but cannot smell. They have hands, but they cannot feel. Feet, but they can't walk. They cannot make a sound with their throats. Those who make them are just like them, as are all who trust in them. Do you see what he says at the end there? When you start to worship something, you become like it. And he said, these people, they have these statues, and it's simply amazing because they made these statues. And they have eyes, but they're blind. And this was such an Old Testament theme, in fact, that the idea of having eyes but can't see or being blind meant it was shorthand for idolatry. So when you said to somebody, hey, you have eyes, but you can't see, ears, but you can't hear, it meant you were an idol worshiper. That's why in the New Testament, when Jesus said that constantly to the Pharisees and those who would not listen to him, his point was, you're engaging in idolatry. For them, it was the idolatry of tradition. Their tradition had become their idol. But we become like what we worship. because we were made to be reflectors. And so he says these statues, they look like sort of beings, but they're dead and they're lifeless. And when that becomes your God spiritually, you become dead and lifeless too. Because all idols, anything other than God, is dead spiritually. The only thing worthy of being reflected is God. If we try to reflect anything else, we're dead spiritually. And yet the reality is we become like we worship in other ways too. Think of money, for instance. If money becomes your God, you reduce the world to money. You become like that. You begin to see people in terms of how you can make a profit or not, where you can make more money, less money. You're no good to me. I can't make money from you. And then we become that. Or you could substitute sex or any number of things, and it's the same result. We're going to become like what we worship. And Psalm 106, in fact, it says at Horeb, and this is talking of the Exodus generation, they made a calf and worshiped the cast metal image. They exchanged their glory for the image of a grass-eating ox. They forgot God, their Savior, who did great things in Egypt. This is making reference to Exodus 32. Moses is up the mountain. The people are getting nervous. They go to Aaron. Hey, where's this guy? What's going on? Let's make a god. And so they grab all the gold. They put it in the fire. They make this statue of a calf, of an ox. They begin to worship it. It says they begin to revel in orgies and all kinds of things. And then Moses comes down the mountain and says, what is going on? And of course, one of my favorite responses in all the Bible is when Aaron says, we put this calf in the fire, or we put the gold in the fire, and out came this calf. But then in that chapter, you see, they've made this stubborn ox as their god, this calf, this heifer. What does God call Israel for the first time in Exodus chapter 32? A moniker that would stick with them every time they did not obey him. Do you know? You stiff-necked people. You see, they had become just like the stiff-necked cow that they made. That's his point. You want to worship a cow? Guess what? You become stubborn, just like a cow. You're stiff-necked. But it says they exchanged their glory. Now, there are three elements of glory exchange that I want to describe for you really quickly. One, two, three. One means that they exchanged the greatness of worshiping God for a counterfeit God that can do nothing. So that's the element of exchanging something that would be worth something, like 500 million rand for this, which I believe is not even worth the money, the paper it's printed on at this point. Oh, it's a great souvenir. So that's the first element. The second element is they exchanged in the sense that they could no longer reflect God's image, but would instead reflect the image of a lifeless idol. That's what they were reflecting into the world. And the third element is, rather than becoming like God, they were going to become spiritually dead like the thing they were worshiping. You see, you can almost picture it. We're kind of created in the middle here. God sets us down as human beings. And this isn't, you know, I'm just trying to graphically paint this out for you so you can see it. Okay? We're in the middle, and there's two paths we can go. Because we were created to be in God's image. We are created to reflect. So this way is, I do my will and not God's. I exalt myself and try to live my own life the way I want. I live for my own interests. I begin to worship some aspect of the creation, whether it's a statue or an animal or money or myself or pleasure or whatever it is. Okay? I become spiritually blind. I reflect the image of that idol. It perverts the relationships that I'm in with other humans, with God. And I begin to be conformed to the image of something far different than God, and it results in eternal destruction. Or the other path, I'm back in the middle here, I can humble myself, do God's will, suffer and serve for others willingly, love others, put their interests first, worship the Creator, have true sight and spiritual wisdom, reflect God's true glory, be transformed to become like Christ, to be like God, and in the end it's eternal life. As I reflect God's image back into the world, it's two paths, they're very clear. And it's laid out, what are you going to worship? Now Isaiah 6, in verse 6 he says, "Then one of the seraphim flew to me, and his hand was a glowing coal that he had taken from the altar with tongs. He touched my mouth with it and said, 'Now that this has touched your lips, your wickedness is removed and your sin is atoned for.' Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, 'Who should I send? Who will go for us?' 'Here am I. Send me.' And he replied, 'Go. Say to these people, keep listening, but do not understand. Keep looking, but do not perceive. Dull the minds of these people, deafen their ears and blind their eyes, otherwise they might see with their eyes and hear with their ears, understand with their minds, turn back and be healed.' Then I said, 'Until when, Lord?' And he replied, 'Until cities lie in ruins without inhabitants, houses are without people, the land is ruined and desolate, and the Lord drives the people far away, leaving great emptiness in the land. Though a tenth will remain in the land, it will be burned again, like the terebinth or the oak, which leaves a stump when felled. The holy seed is the stump.'" That's a really dense passage. So I'm going to try to make it really simple. In one aspect, this is about Isaiah and his lifetime. But in another aspect, he's looking forward to the Messiah. And he's mimicking a ceremony. He's describing a pagan ceremony where they would take an idol and take a burning coal, and they would do like this opening of the mouth ceremony where they would put this burning coal on the lips of the idol, which would prepare it for the god to send his image into the idol and inhabit the idol. And so the angel here is doing that to Isaiah, but he's preparing him to reflect God's image. So it's kind of mimicking. Do you see what I'm saying? And saying, hey, I'm choosing you to go reflect my image. And to go preach to the people. And this would be a foreshadow of what the Messiah would be. God's image. Come to preach to the people. And he says, but even then, the holy seed that is supposed to be Israel, they're going to be blind too. They're going to be engaged in idolatry just like the rest of the world. So when the Messiah comes, those people, because of their idolatry, they'll be just as spiritually blind as the pagan nations around them. If we're not doing God's will, it doesn't matter where you go or what group you're part of. You're engaging in idolatry. Israel had to learn that. We have to learn that. How many of us think because, oh, I'm part of a certain church or the Fox Valley Church of Christ or the Milwaukee Church of Christ or the Cape Town Church of Christ and I go every Sunday, that there makes me a reflector of God and a disciple and I'm all good because I go to that church? Well, I could sit in the garage all day. It doesn't make me a car. If we're not reflecting God and doing His will, let's not fool ourselves. Jeremiah chapter 2 says, Here's what the Lord says. What fault did your fathers find in me that they went so far from me? Followed worthless idols and became worthless themselves. They stopped asking, where is the Lord who brought us from the land of Egypt, who led us through the wilderness, through a land of deserts and ravines, through a land of drought and darkness, a land no one traveled in, no one traveled through, and where no one lived? I brought you to a fertile land to eat its fruit and bounty, but after you entered, you defiled my land. You made my inheritance detestable. The priests quit asking, where is the Lord? The experts in the law no longer knew me, and the rulers rebelled against me. The prophets prophesied by Baal and followed useless idols. Therefore, I will bring a case against you. This is the Lord's declaration. I will bring a case against your children's children. Cross over to Cyprus and take a look. Send someone to Kedar and consider carefully. See if there's ever been anything like this. Has a nation ever exchanged its gods? But they were not gods. Yet my people have exchanged their glory for useless idols. Be horrified at this, heavens. Be shocked and utterly appalled. This is the Lord's declaration. For my people have committed a double evil. They've abandoned me, the fountain of living water, and dug cisterns for themselves, cracked cisterns that cannot hold water. What he says here is, my people, I led them into the promised land, and then they got fat and lazy and comfortable, and forgot who brought them there, and forgot whose will it was they were supposed to do. And then he said, they did what not even the pagan nations do. Not even pagan nations abandon their gods for new gods. They just bring in the fake gods and add them to the list. But when you're worshiping the true God, you can't just add another god. Because the minute you add something else or put it in the place of God, which is the reflecting place, then you've completely replaced God. So he says, my people, when you put something before me, you do what even pagans don't do. You exchange your God. You give it up. It's a terrible thing. We're actually going to skip by this one in the case of time. Oh, no, wait. We have time. We're going to go back and do that one. How about that? We're going to do it. Isaiah 44. This is what the Lord, the King of Israel and its Redeemer, the Lord of hosts, says. I am the first and I am the last. There is no God but me. Who, like me, can announce the future? Let him say so and make a case before me, since I've established an ancient people. Let these gods declare the coming things and what will take place. Do not be startled or afraid. Have I not told you and declared it long ago? You are my witnesses. Is there any God but me? There is no other rock. I do not know any. We'll stop right there for a minute. He says, you want to worship another god? Tell you what, have that god tell the future. Have that God tell you what's going to happen in the coming times. Have that God save you. So stop for a minute and think, what are some of the things I put in my life in front of God? Is it comfort? Is it success? Is it my job? Is it money? Is it anything else? What is it that I put before God? God says, tell you what, tell that thing to see the future. Tell that thing to comfort you in your time of need. Tell that thing to save you on the final day. Spend our whole life going after money. On the day you die, what good is it? Is it going to save you? And yet we're obsessed with it. How about our own will? Well, I kind of want to do things my way, my own will. Is that going to save you? Are you fit to be in the position of God? Because doing our own will is idolatry. It is saying, I want to be God. I am the king of my own universe. Y-O-U, universe. It goes on. He says, all who make idols are nothing, and what they treasure does not profit. Their witnesses do do not see or know anything, so they will be put to shame. Who makes a god or casts a metal image for no profit? Look, all its worshippers will be put to shame. And the craftsmen are humans. They will assemble and stand. They will all be startled and put to shame. In Hosea 9:10, he says, when you engage in idolatry, you exchange the glory of God for the shame of an idol. And if I can get you to see one thing tonight, it's to stop seeing it as them, Israel, ancient people, they did idolatry, and to see us right there with them doing the exact same things. And at least their idols looked like something. We fold ours up and put it in our pocket. Or we go to the electronics store and buy it and hang it on the wall and worship at it all day while we stare at it and it tells us what to think and value. And we engage in the cult of media and personality. Or the celebrities become our gods. We want to know what they're doing and what they wore this week and all of that kind of thing. And you don't think that has the taste of idolatry? We do the same things. Let's not separate ourselves. Let's see ourselves in these verses. God says they will be put to shame. Tomorrow night we're going to look at a very convicting picture from the Old Testament of idolatry. I'm just going to give you a little teaser. And in it, you'll be deeply convicted because you will say, oh my, I do the same things that this king of Judah did. So look forward to that. That's going to be exciting. Little teaser there. Goes on in Isaiah. He makes a god or his idol with the rest of it. Now, we skipped a little verse there, but he was talking about you go down, you cut a tree, you take some of the wood, you cook your meal over it, and then it says, and then you make a god or idol with the rest of it. He bows down to it and worships it. He prays to it, save me, for you are my God. Such people do not comprehend and cannot understand, for he has shut their eyes so they cannot see and their minds so they cannot understand. No one reflects. No one has the perception or insight to say, I burned half of it in the fire. I also baked bread on its coals. I roasted meat and ate. I will make something detestable with the rest of it. I will bow down to a block of wood. What he's saying is this. When you start putting something in front of God, God will just let you do it. And in that sense, he's like, I will make you blind because I made you to reflect. And so if you start putting things in between the reflection of God's glory, it will make us blind. And then the sad part is we won't be able to see the stupidity of our own actions. We'll think, well, this is really great. This is awesome. There's no problem here because I guarantee you when Israel engaged in this, nobody was going around saying, we're going to just get rid of God and worship these other statues. They thought they could do both. Just like we think we can do both. He goes on, he says, he feeds on ashes. His deceived mind has led him astray, and he cannot deliver himself or say, isn't there a lie in my right hand? Remember these things, Jacob and Israel, for you are my servant. I formed you. You are my servant. Israel, you will never be forgotten by me. There's a dangerous road we go down when we put anything even for a minute in front of God in our lives. The danger is you begin to go blind. And the blinder you are, the less you can see. And then your mind becomes more blinded, and you start thinking more and more deluded. The biggest warning light that any other brother or sister should give us is, you know, it seems like there's something other than God first in your life. That should be blaring sirens. In fact, I challenge you to go ask somebody you're close to, the people you know, and say, be honest. Do you believe that God reflecting His image, doing His will, living as a kingdom person is the number one thing in my life? Or do you think there's something else there? And be humble to the answer. Don't be defensive, because why would somebody lie about that? And you say, well, I asked them and they told me and they thought that I was putting this first in my life. Well, they're wrong. Isaiah says, yeah, you can't see the lie in your right hand. You've had the shutters pulled down over your eyes. We become like what we worship. In Daniel chapter 4, there's this fascinating scene. You've heard of King Nebuchadnezzar, yes? Okay. And you know that strange story where, well, first he has this dream. And part of the dream is what I put up here. It says, there was this tree and it grew large and strong. Its top reached the sky. It was visible at the end of the earth. Its leaves were beautiful, its fruit was abundant, and on it was food for all. Wild animals found shelter under it, and the birds of the air lived in its branches, and every creature was fed from it. The point of the dream, Daniel comes to say, is you, King Nebuchadnezzar, are that tree. And God raised you up to be this mighty tree to do for the interests of others, to reflect God's will, to be a godly ruler, to take care of others so that they could come to you and be looked out for. But instead, Nebuchadnezzar, you've taken the power and the glory and the position that God gave you, and you just did it for yourself. You turned around and you looked out for your own interests. You glorified yourself, and instead of reflecting God's glory, you tried to bring glory to yourself. That's what he tells Nebuchadnezzar. And he then says in verse 16, let his mind be changed then from that of a man, and let him be given the mind of an animal for 7 periods of time. That's a really strange deal. Right? And suddenly it says Nebuchadnezzar becomes like an animal. Well, what's going on here? It's actually a very prevalent biblical theme. You see, God made man in His image, human, put them in His garden to care for His creation, to rule over His creation, including the animals and the beasts. And right away, when human beings stop doing that, stop doing our will, we suddenly find in Genesis 3, rather than man reflecting God's will and subduing creation, all of a sudden, the serpent has the upper hand. Creation has now taken the upper hand, and we've subjected ourselves to it. And what happens is this. Well, before I answer that, I'm going to ask you a question right after I take a sip of water. What part of God's creation was created to do its own will? That's not a trick answer. There's an actual answer. Does anybody know? Not man. Definitely not man created to do his own will. If you yell that, it's got to be loud. Animals. I have a dog. He's an ugly little dog. He's about this high. I can say he's ugly because my wife has flown back to America now. She's not here. And she's not going to hear this, hopefully. But, and his name is Johnny Cash. So, Johnny Cash is the most self-focused creature in the face of the earth. When Johnny Cash wants food, he begs for it. When he wants to go out, he does his stuff. When he does whatever he feels like doing. He takes care of his own interests. I will actually hand him a piece of food, you know, a scrap of pizza or something. He'll grab it and run off in the corner with it like I'm going to steal it from him. I just gave it to you. And then, of course, you have to have fun with him, you know, and I'll go like that. And then he grabs it and he runs off. My wife is convinced that the dog loves her. And I try to tell her, no, he wants your food, he likes your body heat, and he finds the protection of the pack in you. But ultimately, Johnny looks out for his own self-interests. Now, I'm aware that you can sort of train animals, and there are some minor exceptions, but by and large, that's what God made the animal kingdom for. Right? The beast was made to do his own will. Humans were made for something higher, a higher calling, to reflect and do God's will. But when we do our own will, we become like the beast. We become animalistic. In fact, I'm very concerned in our culture more and more. I just saw an article the other day that was justifying certain behaviors such as not being monogamous, having multiple sex partners, deviant forms, homosexuality, things like that, and justifying it based on the fact that, well, you can find examples of this in the animal kingdom. Therefore, humans shouldn't feel bad about doing it. In other words, that's now become our justification. Well, if animals do it, then it's okay for us to do. No! Wrong. But think of somebody, we even sort of recognize this, when somebody becomes so given into their own will, so dangerous, that they don't care about anybody else, anybody else's needs, wants, desires, or anything, what do we say? Well, they've become a monster. When we do our own will, we become like the beast. And you see a biblical imagery carried throughout. It's not good when humans become beast-like. Revelation picks up on that, isn't it? The ultimate form of evil is what? The beast. I can't give you all the examples tonight. You can go study it out on your own, but it's never good to be called the beast. And so what God was telling Nebuchadnezzar, tell you what, Nebuchadnezzar, you want to live for your own self-interest and your own will? You want to act like an animal? You want to engage in the behavior that I created beasts for? Then I'll let you go all the way. And I will make you be a beast for a while and see how you like it. Get that in our heads. When we do our own will and not God's, that's what God made the animals for. He made us for something better. He made us to reflect and do His image and become like Him rather than the idols. It's that we're going to turn to tomorrow night and focus on. Thank you.